I believe multimillionaires who want an enduring legacy should own cash-flowing real estate forever and not gamble on fix-and-flip speculation. Warren Buffett once said, rule number one, don't lose money. Rule number two, don't forget rule number one. But over the last several years, investors have experienced paused distributions, capital calls, sometimes total loss of capital. They've got fragile income streams. They don't have durably predictable income over long periods of time. They have tax erosion, too much of their money on a monthly basis, and an annual basis is going to Uncle Sam. And they've got no margin for error, right? They've spent decades building this amount of wealth, and they know that one bad deal could literally unravel everything. So today, I'm going to unveil the Sunrise Capital Strategy. This is a framework that's built upon history's greatest businessmen, history's greatest investors, to preclude some of those significant pain points that all of us have unfortunately faced over the last handful of years. We're leveraging time-tested principles of folks like Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger. They've implemented these strategies to build a business from $0 to $1 trillion in just one generation. And we've taken those principles and we've applied them to real estate, essential use real estate, in an effort to help everybody generate cash flow and build legacy wealth in a tax-efficient manner. That's what I'm trying to do for my family. That's what my business partner's trying to do for his family. We're going to help out as many people as possible do that as we can along the way so that we can move from simply building wealth. That's not enough. We can't just simply build wealth, but we can also move towards becoming a sage investor where we not only build wealth, but we also build wisdom over time. And we pass along not only wealth, but wisdom so that you can materially change your tree, your family tree for multiple generations to come. My name is Brian Speer. I'm the co-founder, principal, CEO over at Sunrise Capital Investors, and we've used the Sunrise Capital Strategy to great effect for more than a decade now. We've done some pretty amazing things. We've helped over 1,000 investors over time. We've done about $1 billion in transactions. We manage hundreds of millions of dollars for our partners along the way. We've got hundreds of millions of dollars in mobile home parks and parking assets all over the country, 18 different states now. It's amazing. Over 30 consecutive quarters of on-time distributions to our partners. We've got multiple deals, multiple funds where we've basically taken that investor capital. We've gotten it all back to investors. So folks are operating on an infinite cash on cash return. They're playing with the house's money, as it were. And, you know, we've done 16 full cycle mobile home park deals with over a 40% internal rate of return, all this crazy stuff, right? I say all of that to simply convey that that success, that track record is not because we invest in the best deals. It's not because we invest in the best niches. And I could prove it to you because there's plenty of guys that invest in mobile home parks that have paused distributions, capital calls, total loss of capital over the last handful of years. So why have we been so successful? We would point to the Sunrise Capital Strategy. It is the manner in which we ultimately manage capital. That is the key differentiator. That is the secret sauce of what we do. And today, for the first time, we're going to unveil that to the marketplace. I have literally had thousands of calls with investors over time. And the same sorts of things pop up over and over and over. These are guys that are seven figures, eight figures, sometimes nine figures in net worth over time. And it's interesting to see the sort of themes that pop up. And the sad state of affairs is you come to realize that they have fragile income streams. They're seeking durable, predictable income over long periods of time. And it's very elusive. It's very hard to ultimately get that. Even the deals that are successful, sometimes it's very lumpy, right? Where there's not a lot of income in the very interim period of time. And then maybe after 3 or 4 years, they sell a property and they get a big spike of income. Congratulations if that works. But what happens, A, if that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow never comes? And wouldn't it be better to have safe, predictable, durable income coming in like clockwork every single week, every single month, every single quarter, every single year, so that you could live the life that you want today, have the freedom, freedom of time, freedom of money, freedom of relationship, freedom of purpose that you want with your family right now, instead of wondering when that next check is going to come? All of the individuals that we serve understand that pain point, and our capital strategy solves for that. Another one of the main themes that we hear over and over and over again is that folks are facing tax erosion. Taxes are eroding a huge portion of their wealth, right? These folks are in the highest tax bracket, and they're getting crushed. Uncle Sam is taking a huge percentage of every additional dollar that they're earning on an annual basis. It seems like the success that they have, they're being penalized, right, for that success. At the end of the day, right, it's not about what you make, it's about what you keep. And we do our best to try to help you keep more of your hard-earned money in your pocket. We feel like you can do better with it than the government can. The Sunrise Capital Investors strategy solves for that. Another one of the main pain points that we hear over and over and over, a common refrain, is that there's no margin for error. It shows up in a handful of different ways, but the truth is they realize that one bad deal could unravel everything. Folks have done everything right. They've worked exceptionally hard for many, many years, oftentimes decades, to finally become quote-unquote successful in the eyes of society, right? They've worked really hard. They've gone to school. They've got good grades. They've gotten a degree. They've gotten an advanced degree. Sometimes they had to take out loans along the way. Then they went on to the professional world. They started working hard, started generating great incomes along the way, paid off those student loans, finally got above water, now started building a little bit of wealth over time, have some money to finally invest. It's taken decades to ultimately get there, and they realize that one bad deal could unravel everything. So at this stage, principal loss isn't an option. It's taken decades to ultimately get here, and one bad deal, one significant mistake, could erase decades of hard work. And the capital strategy solves for that by keeping a margin of safety every step of the way. You've already been burned before, or you've seen friends and family members who have been burned. So again, you got to avoid that like the plague, and the capital strategy solves for that. And at the end of the day, you know, unfortunately, we've had folks that have passed away that have become investors in our funds over time. And, you know, when you have conversations with folks that have been involved for extremely long periods of time and they're getting towards the end of the journey, you have more of a significant revelation, right? You've built some wealth over time, but so what? People begin reflecting on the meaning of life and what they're trying to achieve and ultimately what they're really doing. They want to be able to have the sufficient cash flow to do what they want and live the lifestyle that they would like with their family today. But they also, at the end of the rainbow, not only want to pass along a little bit of wealth, but they want to understand that what they're doing has meaning, right? They don't want to walk away with an unfulfilled legacy. They want to walk away knowing that what they did actually matters, right? On paper, you've succeeded, but you're wondering, what's my legacy? What's it going to be? You're running out of time to share all the value, share all the wisdom that are going to nurture your family for generations to come. And the capital strategy solves for that. It helps people move away from just building a little bit of wealth and passing along a little bit of money towards passing along not only wealth, but also wisdom, how to manage money in a framework to ensure that all the time, energy, effort, and decades of hard work that you've put in does not get squandered immediately upon your departure, right? You could pass along a framework for the next generation so that your kids and your grandchildren and beyond ultimately are exceptionally well off decades down the road as you had originally envisioned as you were going through this life, so that you know that it's not all for naught, as it were. We've had too many scenarios where you've seen folks, you know, go bootstraps to bootstraps in a handful of generations. You've heard those horror stories. You don't want to be part of that group. And so when you read about all the world's most successful entrepreneurs, all the world's most successful businessmen, all the world's most successful investors, you come to realize that the time-tested principles are the ones that you should be building your foundational strategy upon. You don't want to be building things upon fleeting things that come and go. And when you sit back and you reflect on that, you come to realize that you want to build your capital strategy on principles that were true 100 years ago, that are true today, and that are going to be true 100 years from now. And it's for this reason, right? They're very simple things like, again, buy businesses at reasonable prices, focus on cash flow over appreciation, hold assets forever to maximize compound growth over time. Don't invest outside of your circle of competence. Always protect the downside before you ever even consider the upside, right? The old Charlie Munger, invert, always invert, right? Protect the downside before you ever even contemplate the upside. All these are foundational principles that have been true for thousands of years and will be true for thousands of years from now. And that's really should be the foundation of your philosophy. This is my personal perspective. And it's why all of these roads lead back to the crazy world of mobile home parks. For those unaware, Warren Buffett, he's actually the largest player in the mobile home park space. He's the largest owner of mobile homes in the world. He's the largest builder of mobile homes in the world through Clayton Homes. He's the largest lender on mobile homes in the world through 21st Mortgage. And he's the second largest lender on mobile home parks through Berkadia, which is a subsidiary of Berkshire Hathaway. And again, it's because of the amazing moat that this business has, right? Beautiful supply and demand economics along the way. And it's not just Warren Buffett, the greatest investor of all time. Sam Zell is readily known as the greatest real estate investor of all time. He's the founder of the Modern REIT. He started Equity Office. He started Equity Lifestyle. He started Equity Residential. And he is quoted as stating verbatim that mobile home parks are the best real estate investment that has ever existed. So if the best investor of all time and the best real estate investor of all time both believe that mobile home parks are the best investment around, I would pose to you that we'd be well served to ultimately dig a heck of a lot deeper into knowing why that is the case. And I've certainly done so over the past decade, dedicated a huge percentage of my time to understanding the niche, allocating huge portions of my personal family's net worth towards it. Well over 90% of our net worth is inside of this respective niche. And I think we'd be well served you'd be well served to actually explore if that'd be a good fit for you and your family as well over time. But as I mentioned, it's not just the individual niche. It's not just the individual deals that ultimately determine whether or not you're going to be successful along the way. It's how you manage money. So we're going to go ahead and introduce today the seven-pillar framework known as the Sunrise Capital Strategy. And we don't have time to dig super granularly into each one of the individual letters of the acronym. Again, the word capital is a seven-letter acronym, which outlines kind of the capital strategy over time. We don't have enough time to dig really, really granularly into each individual letter of the acronym. We'll do so in subsequent episodes, and we'll be talking about this for years and years and years to come. But today we're going to do a very quick flyover. We'll walk through each of the individual letters, what they stand for, and then we'll do a quick little zoom through on each letter just to get you an understanding of how we manage money for the betterment of everybody involved, for the betterment of our family, my business partner's family, and everybody that ends up joining our team. We believe that this is, in fact, the best way to manage capital to have the highest likelihood of outcome, the highest assurance of outcome possible. So we're going to dive into some of these here today, but C is cash flow first. It's the foundation of everything we do over here at Sunrise. Henry Singleton would convey that you need to optimize for free cash flow, and Warren Buffett's just a huge fan of Henry Singleton. And Warren Buffett would convey that Henry Singleton is the single best capital allocator in the history of the United States. And as you guys know, cash flow is the lifeblood of any respective business. Without cash flow, the business will eventually die. Maybe not immediately, but eventually that business will unfortunately die. I was actually speaking in Pasadena a couple of months ago. And when I was out there on stage, I used an example of, you know, folks that are involved. For those unaware, Pasadena is pretty expensive out there. Don't know if you know, pretty expensive to buy houses out there, right? So if folks were going to go out there and just use that city as an example to go purchase single family residential real estate, right? And you're going to go make an investment, you're going to go buy a house and ultimately rent it out to the marketplace. Again, because it's so expensive, let's just use a round number. Say it's $1 million house that you end up buying, you're going to rent it out. Well, that house is going to end up having a few thousand dollars of rent on a monthly basis, and it's probably unlikely, given the high purchase price of that individual investment and the modest amount of revenue coming in from rent, that that's going to be a cash flow positive investment. Let's say it's probably cash flow negative. Maybe it's net neutral. Maybe you get lucky and you got a little bit of positive cash flow. But the sad state of affairs is it's probably unlikely that you've fully baked into account all the myriad of different expenses that are associated with that respective investment over the long term. The capital expenditures are ultimately going to pop up at some point, somebody somewhere, right? So when you take into account the PIDI payment, the principal, interest, taxes, insurance, et cetera, you might be cash flow positive, but the truth of the matter is you probably haven't taken into account all the turns, the residents turning over time. You also probably haven't taken into account in earnest the cost associated with modifying the roof over 20, 30 years, right? And the various turns that are necessary, as well as, you know, the water heaters and all the myriad of things that go out over very long periods of time. And that's how a lot of folks ultimately get into precarious situations, because you haven't really underwritten prudently the cash flow needs of any given individual respective business. And you see this far too often in syndications where guys are doing fix and flip investments over the course of 3 to 7 years, and they're believing that they have a certain sufficient amount of cash flow in the interim period. But the truth of the matter is, you know, they're operating with a hot potato philosophy that, hey, we're going to get in and out of this before we have to fix the roof, or before we have to fix this, that, or the other. And the sad state of affairs is if you operate with that business model, it's a hot potato. And somebody somewhere, they're going to mistime the market. They're not going to be able to get out. They're going to have to go fix those additional capital expenditures. It's going to suck all the cash out of the business, and you're going to adversely affect everybody along the way. That business eventually dies. And this is why you've had too many different individuals over the course of the last handful of years have paused distributions, capital calls, sometimes total loss of capital, because you're not focusing from a cash flow first perspective. And if I'm going to zoom further out, you know, when Henry Singleton is allocating capital, he's talking about optimizing for free cash flow. So what are we really looking to do? We're trying to basically look out into the marketplace across the bevy of different things that are available to you and determine which individual business is ultimately going to throw off the most cash flow over the course of the next 50 years. So you're not only focusing on the individual cash on cash return on a monthly basis, which is where most folks ultimately stop when thinking about real estate investments, right? That Pasadena single family house that we're referring to, it's got rent that comes in, it's got expenses that you got to pay on an ongoing basis. And ultimately, you know, you might have a tiny little bit of operating cash flow. And that's what most people think about. But the truth of the matter is, real cash flow, free cash flow, optimizing for free cash flow, you have to take into account a significantly longer duration. And what that means is, over long periods of time, the investments need to be deployed in assets that have high quality long-term macroeconomic tailwinds where the property values likely increase over time. And that can be due to just high quality long-term macroeconomic tailwinds, as I'm mentioning, or it could be due to forced appreciation where you have the ability to control your own destiny by virtue of implementing a business model that where you can materially control the NOI. But regardless, let's say you buy a property worth $1 million. Over time, fingers crossed, that property will increase in value. You have a little bit of retained earnings on the balance sheet. You have to then think, how can I ultimately extract those retained earnings on the balance sheet and actually get them into my pocket? That would be another form of free cash flow. And when you take into account both of those things, when you take into account the operational free cash flow plus the retained earnings on the balance sheet, extract that when you compare it to the CapEx, the capital expenditures that you have to redeploy into that business over time, you simply look at all of the math and you say, which business is ultimately going to provide me the best free cash flow over the course of the next 50 years? You have to have a much longer time horizon than what most folks ultimately do to ensure the outcome that you want for you and your family. And if you take that strategy and you look at it across a 50-year horizon, you say, which investment is best? This, A, B, C, D. And you simply deploy the capital to the investment that's likely to achieve the best optimized free cash flow over the course of the next 5 decades. And if you do this consistently over long periods of time, you have a very high likelihood and assurance of outcome. And you have to make sure that whatever, you know, deals that you're investing in are going to have sufficient cash flow to ride out the next inevitable recession, because everybody's crystal ball is broken. My crystal ball is broken. Your crystal ball is broken. The Fed doesn't even know what they're doing. Okay. So you have to have cash flow, which is the lifeblood of the business that will survive through the next inevitable recession. And if you can do that, then it checks the box, and then you can move on to the next stage of the capital strategy, which is A, add value. And when we say A, add value, what we mean is we must materially be able to impact and influence the value of the properties. Meaning, I do not want the investment and the success and the outcome of my investment to be determined exclusively at the whims of Mr. Market. I want to ensure that my investment, I have the ability to make a material impact on the outcome as to whether or not that investment is going to be successful. And you do this by adding value, by forced appreciation, not just long-term macroeconomic tailwinds, but forced appreciation by, you know, if I'm going to look at the chessboard, right, and we're out there and we're playing a game and I'm walking into that game, there must be a couple of moves that I can make on that chessboard to materially impact the outcome of the game. So whenever we buy a property, we have a three-lever framework that we instill anytime that we buy a new asset, where we have three levers that we can pull, different opportunities that we have to materially make changes in the value of that respective property, to drive revenue, to minimize expenses, to materially impact the outcome, where I can flick, ding, make a dent, and actually determine whether or not that investment is going to be successful. So, you know, that three-lever framework can come in the form of, you know, low-hanging fruit, mid-grade fruit, and high-hanging fruit. On the low-hanging fruit, it's just buying deals with below-market rents over time, where we know that we could recapture that loss to lease. We find this oftentimes in more niche real estate sectors. I won't go on here, but basically, in a nutshell, if you can find deals that have below-market rents, you can oftentimes control your own destiny. In the same vein, we have a second lever that we pull is operational inefficiency. When you're in niche real estate sectors, you could find situations where, for whatever reason, they've been operated, you know, and owned from mom and pop operators that haven't maximized the efficiency of the investments. You can oftentimes bill back for water, sewer, trash. These things are commonplace in more traditional real estate sectors. You'd see that all over in multifamily, but in our crazy world of mobile home parks, oftentimes we'll find deals that folks haven't billed back for utilities, which is one of the most simple ways to ensure that everyone is treating the property as fairly as possible. And the truth of the matter is, if you're doing that, then you're actually treating the residents more fairly, because if you do not, then over time, the rents are going to have to increase at a rate higher than they otherwise should. If people are only paying for what they use, then they won't squander as much. It means you don't have to drive revenues from the lot rents in near as high a manner. Getting a little bit more granular here, but the point is, you have to ensure that you can materially impact the NOI, and we can do so through three different levers: buying below market rents, operational inefficiency, and the third lever is infill. So basically, in a nutshell, there's oftentimes, you know, opportunities in mobile home parks where you buy a 100-space mobile home park. Maybe there's 80 homes there and there's 20 vacant lots. Well, the highest hanging fruit, the most difficult upside to achieve, is actually bringing in 20 brand new homes, selling them to the marketplace. Again, adding more affordable housing stock to the marketplace. It's a beautiful thing. You get to make a dent in the affordable housing crisis, but it takes a little bit more time, energy, effort, and work to do that. But you know, because there's a massive demand for affordable housing, that you'll be able to bring that to the marketplace and increase revenue. revenues along the way. And these are ways that just by virtue of having a high quality business, being a great operator, that you can control your own destiny. And so if you can check those boxes, you can see, make sure you could check the box on cash flow through any respective recession. And A, ensure that you could check the box by materially being able to make a couple of moves on the chessboard and control your own destiny. Then it passes snuff. We continue to move forward with that respective deal. The third tier of the capital strategy is to P, protect the downside. And we've talked about this before, but again, Charlie Munger, invert, always invert. Far too often people go into investments thinking, how much money can I make, et cetera? What's the internal rate of return? How much money can I make? And thinking about the top side. The truth of the matter is you should be spending exorbitant amounts of your time, virtually all of your time, thinking about how can I lose money? How can I lose my money? And for this reason, you have to try to do everything in your power to mitigate downside risk. This letter of the acronym has so much involved in it that it would be impossible for me to share all the insights in just a very brief period of time. But suffice to say, the intent of this section of the capital strategy is to mitigate every aspect, every single individual downside risk that you could possibly find. We mitigate every one of those before we even contemplating the upside in a respective investment. And it means ensuring that you have sufficient margin of safety immediately at acquisition, where you're buying, I could give you 50 different appraisals over time, where when we buy a deal, the appraised value, we purchase prices, let's say $10 million, and the appraised value is significantly higher than that. That's a margin of safety, and you have to buy with a margin of safety and maintain that margin of safety throughout the entirety of the holding period. And it's not just that, right? That margin of safety, it protects the downside in an exorbitant amount of ways, but it's not just exclusively buying deals where the appraised value immediately day one is significantly higher than the purchase price. It also means mitigating downside risk by not getting out in front of your skis from a debt perspective. It means staggering term debt expirations inside of a fund structure so that you're not in a single point of failure if you have the next great recession occurs or COVID occurs and you've got all of the different individual assets that have term debt expirations that align simultaneously. That provides significantly more risk for any of the different individuals that are involved in that respective fund structure. There's so much more there to unpack, but in a nutshell, you're avoiding downside risk in every way, shape, or form before you ever even contemplate the upside in an investment. So again, P, protect the downside. And while P, protect the downside, is a massively important aspect of the capital strategy, and you can mitigate virtually every aspect and every downside risk in a respective investment. The truth is, the sad state of affairs is, you literally cannot mitigate every single individual piece that is a downside risk in the investment. And I would point to the fact that my crystal ball is broken, your crystal ball is broken, everybody's crystal ball is broken, and market timing risk is something that you literally cannot remove from the investment. When you run the rabbit hole and you think critically about all the different ways you can lose all of your money, that is one area that we will never be able to solve for. I can promise you that there will be an inevitable next recession, right? But nobody ever knows when the next black swan event's going to occur. Nobody knows when the next savings and loan crisis is going to occur, the next internet bubble is going to occur, the next great recession, or the next massive COVID issue, or the interest rate increases. Nobody knows when that's going to occur. The only way to mitigate downside risk in terms of market timing is to invest, don't speculate. And when we say that, what we mean is invest for the long term. Anybody that invests and believes that they're investing, right, with a fix and flip, buy, fix and sell business model over a 3 to 5 year horizon or 5 to 7 year horizon, you might think that you're investing. You might genuinely believe that you're investing, but you are actually speculating because you don't know whether or not at the end of that 3 year horizon, that bridge loan, or that 5 year horizon, that fixed rate 5 year loan, you do not know if you're going to end up being in one of those precarious black swan situations where you could literally lose all of your money. And for that reason, you have to go into an investment with the intent to buy and hold forever. Warren Buffett has conveyed that, hey, if I'm going to go buy a deal, I don't care if the stock market literally turns off for 10 years because I'm buying a durably wonderful businesses that I'm confident is going to perform for a decade and beyond. This is the same approach that we must take if we're actually investing and we're not speculating. And for those folks that have already quote unquote made it in the eyes of society, that have already built some wealth, that have already become successful, the truth is, if you are out there gambling with your money, you are making an imprudent decision. It's taken you decades to get to where you're at and you have no margin for error. One bad deal could literally wipe out decades of hard work, time, energy, and effort. So don't do that. Invest, literally invest. Don't speculate. That's the only way you can do it, is literally buy and hold investments over extremely long periods of time. And if you're going to do that, then logically, the next thought is, if I'm going to buy and hold assets and I really need to hold on to them over extremely long periods of time, then I need to buy durably wonderful businesses, meaning I need to invest in asset classes that have exceptionally high quality long-term macroeconomic tailwinds, where the demand for the product is going up at a rate way higher than the new supply coming online, because that leads to long-term same-store NOI growth. And that's just a fancy way to say better compound interest. And that's really what you're seeking. In the very near term, it's beautiful to be able to flick, ding, make a dent, and create some value add along the way. That's beautiful. I love every bit of it. But when you're really investing over very long periods of time, it's also, and I'd say even more important, to invest where the long-term macroeconomic tailwinds are in your favor. Because time heals many, 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 many wounds in real estate. Real estate is very forgiving. Real estate is not a get-rich-quick style of business over a short period of time with a low probability of success. Real estate is a build massive amounts of wealth over a very long period of time with a very high probability of success. But you have to actually be an investor. You can't be a fix and flip, in and out. Maybe the deal works, maybe it doesn't work. Try to get the timing right. Because if you're doing that, you're creating significantly more risk than you otherwise should. And eventually, if you're operating with, you know, development deals, deep value, heavy value add opportunistic transactions, eventually somebody somewhere is going to mistime the market and you're going to get crushed. You're going to hurt investors dearly. As Munger would say, you never want to interrupt the compounding, right? So avoid that like the plague. Actually invest. Do not speculate. This is why we love mobile home parks. They have the best long-term same-store NOI growth out of any respective real estate sector. That's why Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, or that's why Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, and Sam Zell are so heavily invested in the space. Ridiculously profound long-term macroeconomic tailwinds. Huge moat in the industry. I won't go on, but suffice to say, you have to actually invest and don't speculate. And if you check all of those boxes, right? If you cash flow first, if you add value, if you protect the downside, you invest and you don't speculate, that allows you to build a tax-efficient structure. If the investment checks all the boxes, it's doing all the right things, you know that it's going to be successful, then you optimize for tax efficiency at that point. And it means a lot of different things. It's optimizing for tax efficiency throughout the entirety of the life cycle of the investment. So we start out of the gate by leveraging cost segregation studies, accelerated bonus depreciation, and we are remarkably tax efficient in this crazy world of mobile home parks. I don't care what niche you're involved in, you try to optimize for tax efficiency, but in the mobile home park sector, it is remarkably tax efficient. We've got a partner in the Midwest that is a physician that owns multiple different clinics, and he literally is very fortunate, makes multiple seven figures on an annual basis. His wife happens to be a real estate professional that's a stay-at-home wife that ultimately manages the capital on behalf of the family. She's very intelligent, manages the capital on behalf of the family. So they're able to leverage the real estate professional designation to have passive losses offset their active income. In a nutshell, on average, over the course of the last 7 years, an investment that's been moved forward inside of our funds, somebody that moved forward with a $1 million investment, we'll use the terminology, somebody that moved forward with $1 million investment inside of our fund received a $930,000 passive loss year one inside of the investment on average. And so what this means is we've got a guy that basically invests about $1 million every single year, and he's able to take that $930,000 passive loss and offset his other active income immediately out of the gate. And it's a passive phantom loss. This is not a real cold hard cash loss, but rather he's able to report to the government that he's losing money when in actuality we're outbound making cash flow, we're making distributions, the properties are increasing in value. But on one hand, he's able to report to the government that he's losing money, right, via his K-1 passive loss. So he's able to basically save literally hundreds of thousands of dollars every single year in capital that would otherwise go to Uncle Sam so that he can keep it in his own pocket. Because at the end of the day, it's not about what you make, it's about what you keep. And that's before we even begin to send outbound distributions and the properties continue to increase in value over time. And that's the very beginning, right? This is at the very outset. This is the very early stages of the investment. So at the very beginning, we're trying to leverage the time value of money by increasing the accelerated bonus depreciation immediately out of the gate. Then throughout the entirety of the holding period, some of the other things that we're doing are, as opposed to the buy, fix, and sell model, where you're going to get crushed by capital gains tax, depreciation recapture, friction costs associated with brokerage fees, as well as, you know, if you sell a deal, you know, there's a cash drag between when you sell deal A and when you buy deal B. When you're doing buy, fix, and sell model, all these things slowly take away from the base of investment that you have. They siphon off some of that capital along the way. When in actuality, what you should be doing is after you've added value, the investment has increased, you've got retained earnings on the balance sheet, as opposed to selling the investments, you simply do a cash out refinance, take that capital out as a non-taxable event over time, and continue to allow compounding to occur. If you buy a durably wonderful business that's throwing off exceptional cash flow today, you know it's going to throw off exceptional cash flow in a decade, in 2 decades, why would you not retain that asset over very long periods of time? Because it's going to continue to throw off massive cash flow. It's going to continue to increase in value over time. This is why you want to invest in durably wonderful businesses. Durable in that the income is durable, predictable, safe over long periods of time, and wonderful in that the long-term macroeconomic tailwinds are such that you're going to have long-term same-store NOI growth continuing to increase over long periods of time. And when you have that, then why would you ever sell? Because you don't. If you were to sell, right, you're going to end up getting crushed by depreciation recapture, capital gains, and so much more along the way. So avoid that like the plague. Retain a tax-efficient structure throughout the entirety of the duration of the holding period. It'll allow you to compound wealth so much faster over long periods of time. So assuming you've checked all those boxes, right? You've generated cash flow along the way, added value, protect the downside, invest, don't speculate. You have a tax-efficient structure. It has the highest assurance of outcome possible. If you operate with this manner, I cannot guarantee that we'll be able to get all the chips off the table in a very reasonable period of time. We always underwrite to, you know, get all the investment chips off the table somewhere between years 5 and 7. In our first fund, we were able to do that in 3 years. In our second fund, we were able to return all investor capital in 4 years. But even if we miss the boat and we don't do it in a 5 to 7 year horizon, even if it takes a little bit longer, maybe it's 8, 9, 10 years. From my perspective, that's better than a sharp stick in the eye. What I know to be true is if you operate a business and manage capital with the philosophy that I've just outlined, we will eventually be able to get all of the chips off the table. Maybe it won't be perfect, but it is a better than a sharp stick in the eye because we're avoiding the downside risk, which is, from my humble perspective, the most important piece of the puzzle along the way. And if you can ensure that you do not lose money, again, rule number one, don't lose money. Rule number two, don't forget rule number one. You will eventually be able to get all the chips off the table and be operating on an infinite cash on cash return. This is the highest assurance of outcome possible that we have found to date to manage capital in the most prudent manner so that we can eventually extract all of our original money back out and operate on an infinite cash on cash return. That's what I do for my family's money. And that's what, you know, we believe is the best opportunity for the marketplace today and how you should manage capital prudently to just try to generate cash flow and build legacy wealth in a tax efficient manner. And if you do that, right, then you have the opportunity to leave a legacy to the next generation. You really have two different opportunities and two different paths that you can choose, right? The sad state of affairs is you can choose the path of the Vanderbilts or choose the path of the Rockefellers. Many, many moons ago, the Rockefellers and the Vanderbilts at different periods of time were the most wealthy individuals in this country, right? The Vanderbilts, unfortunately, within 3 generations went bootstraps to bootstraps. However, the Vanderbilts still today have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of individuals that are Rockefellers that are living off of the original capital, the original principle that the patriarch built hundreds of years ago. And it's because they're not just passing along wealth, but passing along a framework and passing along wisdom and how to actually manage that capital for the betterment of the family multiple generations down the road. So real estate's one of these beautiful businesses where you have the ability to completely and materially change your family tree in one generation. I'm living proof of that. I've started from nothing and ultimately have changed our family tree in one generation. And I know that managing capital in this manner is the best way to flick, ding, make a difference and change your family tree, become a sage investor, not just pass along wealth, but also pass along wisdom. If this framework resonates with you, if you recognize the challenges, the same challenges that I do, and if you're serious about protecting what you've already built along the way, then there's a next step. You know, feel free to go to sunrisecapitalstrategy.com. We've done a quick little flyover here today, but we go much, much deeper. We've got a capital strategy masterclass where we go much, much deeper on this respective topic, where we walk through the Sunrise Capital Strategy in detail with case studies and actual deals that we've done that exemplify the things that we're outlining here. And we'll go much, much deeper in due time over the next episodes along the way. We'll talk about how it works, why it works, how it's applied in the real world to help investors create durable cash flow, protect the downside, and then build legacy wealth over time. Again, this isn't theory, guys. This isn't hype. This is what we do. It's a disciplined approach to managing capital once you've already won the game. And that's sunrisecapitalstrategy.com. In the next episode, we're going to walk through the origin story. We're going to talk about how this strategy was developed, how it was forged, how it was built, why it exists, and how Sunrise was built from the ground up. Not the highlight reel, the real story behind the scenes And I'll see you next time, guys. Until next time, you be great.